Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investments. We are pre-recording the show tonight, so if you haven't sent questions a bit late, but do send them for Bright's show tomorrow night, SMS 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.today or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, thank you very much for making time to chat to me during the day while the sun is shining. So it's most peculiar for you both, I know. But the time that we're recording this program, the market is quite firmly in the red, and I suppose there must be a sense of hesitation or dread about what the Federal Reserve may produce this evening. Wayne, if I may start with you, realistically though, is anything the Fed does going to upend the market either way? So whether it raises rates 50 basis points or 25 basis points?
Well, 50 is a given. There is 100% consensus worldwide, and the Fed's told us, so it's 50. There's no doubt whatsoever. So the only question is, do they stop at 3 or do they stop at 5? Now, the market consensus is stop at 3, and I agree with that. I think they will stop at 3. But if inflation remains at 5 plus and doesn't fall to 3 by the end of this year, beginning of next year, then all hell will break loose. Hmm. I mean, we've already seen the Nasdaq's down 20% from its peak. The S&P's down 11% from its peak. Not from its peak year to date. We're down 4% year to date in our market. And maybe there is a bit more weakness. There probably will be if interest rates rise to 3. But if they rise to 5, in other words, inflation stays 5 plus, they will, as I said, literally all hell will break loose.
I mean, David, of course, is, I suppose, the worst-case scenario. And you've got all sorts of articles in the FT saying the Fed is so behind the curve and they've messed this one up and they've called it all wrong. I know you disagree with that view, but does it make you quite nervous about the trajectory of markets if they have got it wrong?
I agree with Wayne. All you have to know, we can actually cut the show off now. You just have to listen to what Wayne said. That's it. That's the whole story summarized. You know, if it stops at 3, there's a good chance that, you know, the global economy will continue its growth and companies will continue to make reasonably good profits and so on, and the market will claw its way up. But if it does go up and the Fed is aggressive, which they will have to be if inflation doesn't go away, then it's going to be a very difficult market. So I think people are nervous waiting to try and establish where it's going to go. But the signs that we're seeing now is like an exhausted sign. You know, it's this, I don't know what you call it, it's like a loop. You just hear, as you say, the FT, the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, CNBC. It's 24 hours of what the Fed's going to do and the whole story, you know. It's just the most boring kind of, show you know, that you can imagine.
Or refrain. I'm trying to think. It's a constant refrain that you're having, and a self-reinforcing one, probably. I mean, just on those growth stocks, so I'm referencing the FT once again, but they talked about some of the big growth funds. I think the Tiger Global Hedge Fund, all these big funds that are invested in the high, you know, beta growth stocks, and how badly they've all done. And the caution was that, well, a stock can fall 50%, but that doesn't mean that the sell-off is over. Wayne, are you still quite nervous? I mean, you referred to the Nasdaq specifically, that it's down off 20% since its peak. Do you think that there's worse to come?
Look, I think a bit of background, and you said this many times, the last, up until 6 months ago, the equity environment in the previous decade could not have been better. It's probably the best in living memory, even Shapiro's living memory. There's never been as good a market for equity as what we experienced post the global financial crisis, with zero interest rates and zero inflation, effectively worldwide for a decade. That's specifically good for growth shares. And we've seen the tech shares happen to be the growth shares this time around. And they shot the lights out. But yeah. many of them are down a lot. I mean, Naspers and Prosus are down 50-60%. Overseas, the shares are also down significantly, because when the environment changes from a growth environment to a value environment, in other words, a higher inflation, higher interest rate environments, the ones that went up in the growth are the ones that fall the most. But now, to answer your question specifically, there's three things I want to say. Two are mitigating factors. The first mitigating factor, and the biggest, is that there's no debt bubble that's going to be burst by rising interest rates, whereas in every other previous occasion of rising interest rates, there was this monster debt bubble that was going to burst. So as long as interest rates go to 3%, there's no debt bubble to burst, we'll avoid an economic recession and a major collapse in the market. The second thing is very specific to South Africa. There was virtually no new supply of commodities coming on stream because the guys went bankrupt in 2015 and had no money. So whatever the downside is, it'll be less severe for South Africa as previous downsides, because we won't see iron ore going to $20 a ton like we did last time, or $30 a ton. The third factor, which is very important to remember as well, is that we know about this rising interest rates. We're well geared for it. The market has come off, but I doubt if there's a minus 40% fall. As long as interest rates only go to 3%, maybe we're three quarters of the way through the fall. Maybe we're halfway through the fall already. But I don't think we're going to see another global financial crisis collapse.
Okay. If I move on to a question, there was a viewer that had sent a question last night's show, which Bright didn't have time to get to, and it was about the increase in interest rates that we're expecting today. And he said, I thought this would be good for bank stocks, but they're really down today, referring to yesterday, Capitec down 4%. What stock should one look at with interest rate anticipation? Now, of course, it's hard to necessarily link a Capitec to what happens to an increase in interest rates in America, but David, I mean, would it be obvious that you would still go into banking or financial shares with the Fed hiking interest rates? And I guess we're also hiking interest rates because we've got high inflation.
In theory, yes. In theory, yes. You know, the theory being that if rates go up, you can charge more for lending and therefore you make bigger margins. But in practice, banks don't make all their money from lending. They make their money from corporate actions, you know, from, in fact, I was looking at S&P Global. You know, we know S&P Global, as the company that, that has the license for the, you know, the S&P 500. It rates stocks. We always say it's Moody's, Fitch, and S&P. Yes. And of course they charge. And what's happening, because of less debt issuance, their profits are falling because they haven't got new instruments to rate. So all I'm trying to illustrate is that banking is a lot more than people knocking on the door and going to the bank manager and borrowing R1,000 and, you know, having to pay a slightly more because interest rates are up and so on. So, and it also means transaction fees. So if things slow down, people are not going to spend. That's where they make a lot of their money. So I think when you look at banks, understand that there's a lot more to just borrowing money. Borrowing and lending money. It's a lot bigger than that. And if we look at our own banks, funny, I was looking a few minutes ago. You know, we're back at levels. We're not even back at levels where these banks were in 2017 or 2018. We're a long way to go to actually get back to those levels.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been an absolute grind, and it's a similar thing in the US.
I mean, and it's been quite, you know, just what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, the banking shares were having an absolute moment. They were doing fantastically. I felt so rich. And everything's come off. Wayne's got to answer a phone call. It is, I suppose.
No, it's going to kill it.
people don't expect you to be on TV at this hour, do they? I mean, they know your regular time.
Not at all. But look, I mean, just to elaborate a little bit more on what David said and to the question. No share is safe in this environment. Banks just might fall less. The value shares might just fall less. No share is safe in this rising interest rate environment. And also banks, I mean, ultimately high interest rates are bad for banks because the economy slows down and they lend less and it costs more for people to borrow, so the banks lend less. But in the very short time period, they actually do get a margin enhancement. But that margin enhancement won't stop the share price from falling in this type of environment.
Yeah. Okay. Then I suppose it's a big head scratcher, isn't it? Because if you're wondering where you put your money, this question might help. And it's on South African retail bonds. Dear panel, could you please explain how safe SA retail bonds are from 1 week to the next? There seems to be a change in perspective. I'm not sure I would agree with that. But if rates go up, the fixed rates for retail bonds also go up. And the main question is if they are safe to invest in like times that we are in. David, if I may start with you, no, they don't go up, okay. Do they?
So rates, I hope I can get this articulate because it's always difficult to try and explain it very easily. But if the retail bond is a 10-year bond, the rate is fixed for 10 years. And if you hold it for 10 years, you're going to get your money back. And you will get the rate that they promised you. So if it's an 8% bond, you will get 8% every year for 10 years and you will be repaid exactly what you had. What happens in the interim is that interest rates fluctuate and people want to buy the bond and want to sell. And that's what causes the fluctuations in the capital value and also in the interest rate, because the rate that you buy and sell it at will be the prevailing rate at that time. But if you hold it for the duration, there is no loss other than an opportunity loss because you're getting 8% and rates might have gone to 9% or something like that.
Yeah. In fact, I think RSA retail bonds, because I was looking at them, you've got durations of 2 years, 3 years and five years. I don't think there's a 10-year bond. And then you get paid out. You can choose to get paid out your interest twice yearly, or you can get it paid out or can get reinvested. I think on the safety factor, I mean, the safety is that you quantify what you're earning from this, right? The lack of safety is if the interest rate that you can get from a money market, it goes to 10% because inflation spikes. But can you see that happening? Yeah. Wayne, do you think that's realistic?
I mean, you do no investments risk-free, so I don't like that term risk-free SA retail bonds. No, if the government goes bankrupt, you're not getting paid out.
Okay.
You know, so no investment is risk-free. Another way of looking at bonds, if you've got R1 million today and interest rates are 10%, in a year's time, you'll have 1.1 million. So if you buy a bond, now tomorrow, if interest rates fall to 8%, the next person will only get 1.08 million in a year's time. So your instrument is more valuable because it's giving you a higher yield. So that's why when rates fall, the price goes up. And exactly the opposite happens when rates go up, the price falls. Mm. So you do get fluctuations. In other words, as David said, if you buy today at 10%, if tomorrow interest rates go to 15%, you're going to lose, if you sell that day, you're going to lose 20% of your capital. Mm. If you hold it for the duration, you'll get your capital back and 10%, but ruling interest rates are 15%. So, you know, no investment's risk-free. There's capital variations on every investment.
Possibly the most confusing thing for a Luddite or a layperson such as myself to understand. Wayne, I think, and yours and David's explanations were extremely insightful. But when people talk about this 30-year bull market in bonds being over, what does that mean for the average lay investor? Why do we care?
Okay. I mean, let's just a bit of history. U.S. bonds peaked at about 15% in 1982, and they hit the low a year or two ago at 0.6. So there has been a 30-year bull market in U.S. bonds. Our bull market started when, David? 98, 99? Somewhere around there. And we've also had a very long bull market in bonds. I think that that was a structural adjustment, and now bonds are going to fluctuate in the U.S. between 3 and 5, and our bonds are probably going to fluctuate between, I don't know, 7 and 10 or 8 and 11 or somewhere around there. So the big structural bull market is over. And I don't think we're starting a brand new bear market. I really don't.
But David, what would a bear market in bonds mean? What does that actually mean?
That rates go up to 5%, or 6% or something. You know, that kind of thing. You're breaking that down. You have to go back over 20 years. Just think of the crises that we've had that have forced the Fed to reduce rates from long-term capital, the collapse of long-term capital, and I think 1998, the emerging market crisis. Then we had the internet bubble bursting. We had 9/11. We had the 08 crisis. And we've had the pandemic. We've had so many issues along the way that have forced the Fed to keep rates down in order to lift the economy. So that's also contributed to this issue. And I think, you know, we all want it to change. That's driven the equity bull market. But I think we all want to get back to a period, a normal period, where people can actually invest in bonds and get a real return. A real return meaning that the interest rate that they get helps them beat is higher than inflation.
But can you actually get back to that with what central banks have done in the last 10 years, 15 years?
Yes, because it's actually not the structural bull market in bonds that's over. Yeah. More correctly, it's a structural falling inflation environment, because bonds just track inflation. That's what they do. So it's not a question, is the bear market in bonds over? Is the bull market in inflation over? Because inflation was also 15 in 1982 and ended up at zero, and now it's back at 8. Bonds just follow inflation, so it's actually an inflation discussion more so than a bond discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing, because you've had all the issues I brought against this kind of backdrop, which I don't know whether it was forced down or whether there just wasn't the kind of expansion in the global economy to pressurize rates. That's why I get a little carried away, because for 15 years or so, we've been complaining about wages. You know, people are not getting their wages. You know, they're getting no increase. All of a sudden, wages go up and everybody's flipping. inflation.
Except wages in South Africa.
They've always been going up.
Okay, so does it mean that you have to temper your expectations for anything that's in the equity market?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitively. I doubt if the next 10-year equity returns will be a third of what the previous 10-year equity returns were. Because the previous 10-year equity returns were three times normal. So I'm just saying the equity market's going back to normal.
Yeah, but that's a hard thing to swallow if you've been used to these returns and you become used to them. You think that this is the norm.
If you're born in the bull market, it's a hard thing to swallow. And remember, in a bull market, everyone's a genius.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So be very careful now for those chaps who knock on your door with a laptop and the fancy hairstyle, kind of shiny suit, driving a fancy car, and they've come to sell you a product, from one of the big banks. You've got to start doing your own homework now. You've actually got to go and read and try and find companies that are going to grow and prosper in what's going to be a more difficult environment. So it's going to be a little harder work.
Okay.
So I must give you a quote from Buffett.
Yeah, what
did I love
you say?
Buffett, and I said through, I'm actually using it in an article I'm writing, right? But, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, they always go at the investment advisors, and they say that the investment environment, the investment advisors are the highest paid professionals by far on a per point IQ rating. In other words, the point IQ, they are by far the heaviest paid profession.
Shapiro's liking this.
You're enjoying this. I imagine there's a bit of hate mail coming your way.
At least no one can accuse Shapiro and I of having fancy hairstyles.
Okay. No, they couldn't, unfortunately. There's a question on Marathi, so I wanted to ask you on commodity stocks. But just before I do, Jean-Pierre Fastay actually wrote a column for the FM this week referencing the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting and the shares that Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger have been buying. And a lot of them happen to be big petroleum companies.
Yeah.
Oxy, Chevron. They've got Activision, I think.
Activision Blizzard.
I mean, do you look at what Berkshire Hathaway is doing and say, okay, I'm going to do that too? And I mean, specifically on the big oil companies, which are supposedly the no-no in this huge transition to a greener economy.
I don't know, Wayne might, but I'd be very, very careful. I think you're going to, there's still, don't think that the pressure on oil companies and the expansion
is going to be just overlooked. I still think there's going to be a lot of clean air environmentalists and ESG experts just being very, very careful about where they go. So I think the rating will continue to remain low, despite the fact that we need them, and we need them to produce more gas and oil.
Yep. And that's exactly what David said. It's right. For the next 5 years, we still need oil. For the next 10 years, we still need oil. You know, so in the medium term, and there's been no new capital put into oil for 5 years because of the whole green energy and the move away from oil. You know, in 20 years' time, I think the world will use 80% less oil than what it does now, but that's 20 years' time. Mm. That's not next year. In the medium, in the short to medium term, we need oil, and there's been no capital investment in oil at all. So the price on average will probably stay high, but I doubt $100 high, but maybe $70, $80 high, because there is actually demand for oil.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the seas of the planet will be boiling in 20 years' time, so maybe, you know, it doesn't actually matter. Live it up now. The question on resources was on Marathi, whether you could have a look. David, I'll start with you, because this is one of your stock picks last year. Had a fillip, then kind of did what Marathi does, which is sort of sink back after the bit of excitement, and it's paid the dividend.
Yeah, I we spoke about Wayne on Friday. We were talking about how well he had called the commodity market. And I think commodities remain steady for the very reason that there's been underinvestment in them. But I'm not sure that we're going to see prices run away. So the success of these businesses will now be on the basis of production. You know, how efficient they are actually producing what they are doing at, say, constant prices. And that will be what will determine how successful they are. But are we going to get more blowouts on some of those commodity prices? I don't think so. Mm. I think we've seen the best in them, and they're just going to bumble along sideways within a narrow range. So you've got to learn to mine efficiently in order to make your profits.
Does that mean that you look at commodity shares, and hopefully those who mine efficiently, who have are in the sort of lower down on the cost curve, do you look to them to for dividends, actually, rather than capital growth? And, I mean, Marathi paid a very sumptuous dividend. Yeah. Is that what you would buy them for?
Look, I don't think the downside is massive, as David said, on commodity shares. I think the prices will certainly be a lot better behaved than in previous downturns, but there will still be a downturn. And I suppose you've got to be cautious on all shares. The mining shares have come off quite a bit. We've seen that for sure. I don't think it's time to buy them yet, though.
Mm, okay. So I'm getting to your stock picks, and you can wax lyrical because you have a bit of time for them. But in your case, Wayne, well, you'll have to explain why you aren't buying anything. In other words, why you're in cash.
I'm going to stick with cash for all the reasons we've been discussing here. Rising interest rates, rising inflation is never good for equity. The market has come off quite a bit from its peak. I think there's a little bit more to come. But I think literally we've probably done 3/4 or 50% of the fall has probably happened, certainly in the tech shares. And the point I want to make is really keep some cash on hand, because if everything pans out the way I see it, I mean, I've got, you know, no guarantees or no idea that I'll be right. But if things pan out the way that I see it, the next thing we're going to do when there's doom and gloom all around us and everyone's crying and everyone's negative is actually buy shares. Mm. Because the one good thing about a market correction is it gives you the chance to buy shares at a good price.
Yeah, okay.
So, because that, to me, that's the next move, is we're actually going to go in and buy.
Okay, so would you buy the share that David is picking this evening, which is Combined Motor Holdings? David, this is sort of this is not in your regular field, I would say.
No, I followed the company since they listed, which was probably in 1987, 1988. So it's not a company that I'm unfamiliar with. It's still a very small company at a market cap of no more than $2 billion. But when I looked at the results, they're absolutely superb. I mean, they're on a multiple. In other words, the price versus earnings is round about 5. they on a dividend yield, because remember, you come dividend, so you're going to get a dividend next month of, I think, 225 cents. So they're on a dividend yield of around about 8%. But more impressive is that they've got 800 million rand in cash. And the share, and their market cap is 2.1 billion. So they don't need 800 million. So somewhere along the line, I don't know what they're going to do with the cash, and they're not the kind of people who spend it. They don't waste it.
Yeah, no,
so somewhere they've got to give it back to you. But I think it's just a, you know, just what you could describe as a seriously good value stock.
Yeah. I mean, poor old Jeb McIntosh. I mean, he must look at Transaction Capital and, I don't know, Karoo and think, why has the market put such a high rating on those guys? And look at me with my little lowly 5 PE.
Yeah, I don't think he cares. I think he just carries on, runs the business, and gives the government a hard time.
Yes, his commentaries are very entertaining. Well, David Wayne, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night. Good evening.